Topic number 2. At this time last month, the artificial crisis over Russian troops in Cuba was in the news. On all sides, there was speculation about what the United States would do, but as it turned out, it was all building up to an anticlimax. Last month, I revealed the Russian strategy to defuse the crisis, and that plan has stayed right on track. The whole flap over Cuba began as a Bolshevik ploy here to stir up opposition to the SALT II Treaty. The struggle now over SALT II is part of a secret war in which the United States is the prime battleground. On one side in this secret war are the atheistic Bolsheviks, the former rulers of the Soviet Union. They have been overthrown, and as they are expelled from Russia, they are flocking here to the United States of America. On the other side in the secret war are those who overthrew the Bolsheviks in Russia. They are Russia's new rulers, the tough band of native Russian Christians who fought for 60 years to take over the Kremlin. Bolshevik power has been building fast in the United States for several years. They want to seize total control here and use America's military power to destroy Russia by plunging the world into nuclear war. To prevent that, the Russians are pushing their own levers of power here to move America toward disarmament. SALT II is to be only the beginning, but it is also a crucial test of power between the Russians and their Bolshevik enemies here in America. The recent flap over Russian troops in Cuba began as a Bolshevik maneuver, but last month I described how the Senator Church Robotoid strategy had enabled Russia to take the initiative away from the Bolsheviks. The organic Robotoid replacement for the late Senator Frank Church was programmed to act even more hawkish about Cuba than the Bolsheviks. In that way, the Church Robotoid became the one voice in the Senate that would count most. As everyone cooled off about Cuba, the Church Robotoid would be programmed to gradually act more satisfied, and in the process it would get SALT II moving ahead once again. But the key to the Russian plan was timing. An important ingredient in the Russian campaign to sell SALT II is their understanding of American psychology. Often we read or hear comments that those fellows in the Kremlin just do not understand how Americans think. But nothing, my friends, could be further from the truth. In Moscow, the Institute on the USA and Canada does nothing else but study our ways and our psychology. They have been at it for 20 years, and they do their job very well indeed. One of the most important facts about our American psychology was used expertly in defusing the Cuba crisis. This is the fact that the American public as a whole has a short memory. Given a little time, we can be counted on to forget about anything, no matter what it is. To choose a vivid example of this, just ask yourself, when was the last time you thought about the Guyana tragedy of last November? Congressman Ryan, the slaughtered newsmen, and the hundreds of helpless men, women, and children murdered at Jonestown are as dead today as they were then, but today, who thinks about it? Russia lost her secret missile base in Guyana, about which I had been warning publicly for over 4 years. A joint American-Israeli commando raid wiped it out, and the Bolsheviks got away with killing hundreds of Americans as a publicity stunt, which was used to gain military access to Guyana. They got away with it because we, the American people, quickly lost interest in having our questions answered. And so in the recent Cuban non-crisis, the Russians knew exactly what to do. First they programmed the Senator Church Robotoid to grab the ball about Cuba. They made him make stern statements that those Russian troops would have to go, otherwise no SALT II treaty. Then the robotized Carter administration spent a full month pretending not to know quite what to do. Gradually the Bolshevik-inspired fever over Cuba cooled off. Anything that could drag on that long could hardly be a real crisis. And besides, the World Series was just around the corner. The whole Cuba flap gradually began to get boring. Finally, the first evening of this month, Monday, October 1, Jimmy Carter Robotoid No. 17 grinned out at America on television. Our Robotoid President praised Russia for new assurances he had supposedly received, quote, "from the highest levels of the Soviet government," unquote. The so-called assurances amounted to a declaration that Russia was not about to change a thing in Cuba. Then Robotoid Carter announced a few muscle-flexing exercises to make everyone feel good. A small new military unit would be set up in South Florida to watch the Caribbean more closely. We would step up surveillance of Cuba, and sometime soon some Marines would be sent to visit our naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. On Capitol Hill, reaction to the speech was feeble, with one exception. The exception was Robotoid Senator Frank Church. Before the speech, the Church Robotoid had been holding up the SALT II Treaty. Afterwards, he announced that he was sufficiently encouraged to allow consideration of SALT II to get underway in his Foreign Relations Committee. But to keep up appearances, he pretended not to be completely satisfied yet. During the remainder of this month of October, SALT II has been gathering steam. In mid-October, the process called marking up the treaty, that is, considering amendments and changes, got going. All along, the Bolshevik plan has been to kill the treaty by adding amendments unsatisfactory to Russia. But already, several killer amendments have been defeated in committee. Robotoid Church, along with several other Robotoids on the Foreign Relations Committee, is doing his job. As programmed, he is so far succeeding in moving SALT II right along. Meanwhile, the Cuban non-crisis is gradually fizzling out. 4 days after Carter's speech on Cuba, an American SR-71 reconnaissance plane reportedly went sightseeing over Cuba. And on October 17, more than 2 weeks after the Carter Robotoid speech, the Marines finally showed up at Guantanamo Bay. Originally, the mock amphibious assault was scheduled to take place as dawn was breaking. But since the whole thing was for domestic consumption here at home anyway, the time was changed to 8:30 a.m. By then, the sun was up nice and bright. As explained in an Associated Press dispatch the previous day, quote, "In addition to providing better light for TV cameras, officials said the change would keep Marines from getting hurt while boarding the boats in the dark," unquote. And so it was, my friends, that on the television news that evening we got to watch the United States Marines scamper ashore at Guantanamo Bay. As of now, the Bolsheviks are trying frantically to devise some new stratagem to upset SALT II. And as I will discuss in Topic No. 3, they may yet succeed in doing so. But at this moment, the Russian campaign to sell SALT II is gathering momentum. Only 2 days ago, on October 25, the Russians dropped another important weight into the balance. The Senate Majority Leader, Robotoid Senator Robert Byrd, announced he will vote for SALT II. The late Senator Byrd himself, from my home state of West Virginia, visited Russia this past June. The organic Robotoid who returned in his place has been working ever since for the passage of SALT II. The Russian program to pass SALT II also includes much more than their Robotoid maneuvers in Congress. The ratification of SALT II is becoming a thread which runs through the entire fabric of American defense and foreign policy. No matter where you stand, you will find arguments in the news today designed to appeal to you. The greatest single worry which most Americans have about SALT II is that it will weaken us militarily. And as I mentioned earlier, that is exactly its purpose. Russia's rulers want to do this in order to prevent nuclear war if possible. But the Guyana episode last year proved conclusively that most Americans prefer comfortable lives over the uncomfortable truth. Time is precious because the Bolsheviks here in the United States are working day and night to try to bring about war, nuclear war. And so, instead of trying to explain everything to a public that does not care about the truth, the Russians are telling us what we want to hear. They are convinced that the alternative would be the death of hundreds of millions in nuclear fireballs. And given the choice, they believe human lives count more than words. As Brezhnev No. 2 of Russia said last June at the SALT II signing in Vienna, "God will not forgive us if we fail." Unquote. So every possible argument is now being used to sell SALT II. We are being told SALT II will make us safer by making it harder for Russia to hide what it is doing militarily. Meanwhile, all kinds of new military toys are being publicized widely on the American side. The leader is the MX missile. If it is ever built, the MX will not be fully operational for 10 years, but its impact in making people feel stronger is here already. Likewise, there is talk of an ABM defensive missile to protect the MX installations, and maneuverable missile warheads for our missiles to evade any future Russian ABMs. Another variation, though, is that we are too weak to do without SALT II. This theme is basically true, thanks to Russia's secret space triad of weapons. As I've detailed in the past, these are the manned Cosmos Interceptor Killer satellites, the manned bases on the Moon, and the manned electrogravitic platforms called Cosmospheres floating high over our heads and in other land and sea areas of the Earth. These super weapons were developed in secret by Russia and deployed suddenly during the closing months of 1977. The United States has no equivalent space triad and is at a great military disadvantage as a result. But most people today are living in the distant past scientifically, and so the fact that we are too weak to do without SALT II is explained in more understandable ways. For example, someone points out that America's highly publicized quick reaction force still exists only on paper. We do not have enough airlift or sea lift capabilities to actually make it work. No wonder it took the Marines 16 days to get to Guantanamo Bay after Robotoid Carter's speech. And then to make things worse, none other than Robotoid Henry Kissinger throws cold water on NATO. In a Brussels speech last month on September 1, Robotoid Kissinger said, quote, "Our European allies should not keep asking us to multiply strategic assurances that we cannot possibly mean." Unquote. In this and other ways, the Russians are shaking Europe's confidence in the United States, and in the process, they have set up what may be the most powerful selling point of all for SALT II. Because now the ratification of SALT II is increasingly seen as a test of leadership for America. On one hand, Europe wants nothing to do with any more wars. On the other hand, the strange behavior of the secretly robotized Carter administration is destroying confidence. NATO leaders are beginning to say, if Carter can't get a SALT II treaty, what good can he do? This move may be the cleverest maneuver yet by Russia. Should the Senate somehow fail to ratify SALT II, it could spell the end of the NATO alliance. War might then be inevitable, but America would stand alone. If SALT II is ratified, NATO may continue, but the desired disarming of America will also be underway. My friends, In the AUDIO LETTER for this past June 1979, I explained that the ratification of SALT II could well be the key issue that would decide between peace and war for America and Russia. And early this month, on October 3rd, a headline in the Washington Star said, "United States-Soviet relations back in holding pattern." The article itself said, quote, "The whole relationship is hung up on whether the Senate ratifies the Strategic Arms Limitations Treaty," unquote. And an administration official was quoted as saying, "It's an unstructured relationship because there's nothing but salt on the table," unquote. SALT II is of supreme importance to Russia's rulers. It will be only a beginning, but without that beginning, nothing else can follow. Already pro-SALT members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee are talking about SALT III. On October 15, the Robotoid replacement for the late Senator Jacob Javits of New York said, quote, "We want reductions," unquote. By the same token, my friends, the Bolsheviks want desperately to defeat SALT II and stop the process. They don't want reductions. They want war. Of all people, Russia's new rulers never forget that surprises are always possible in any human activity. They also know from long and bitter experience that the Bolsheviks have an uncanny talent for springing surprises. In fact, another of these surprises has just taken place, as I will discuss in Topic No. 3. And so by every possible means, the Russians are working to dismantle America's ability to wage war. They already have crushing military superiority over the West, but where the Bolsheviks are involved, that is not enough. So long as the Bolsheviks are left with as much as a box of matches, there is always a chance that they will find a way to burn the house down. We sometimes forget that as of now, there is no SALT treaty of any kind. SALT I expired over 2 years ago on October 3, 1977, but once SALT II is in force, it will provide Russia with an important new tool. It remains to be seen exactly how Russia will use SALT II, but the effect will be to begin putting handcuffs on the Bolshevik war planners here in America. Topic No. 3. 5 months ago I reported that Russia had begun deploying an astonishing new intelligence weapon. These are the organic robotoids, artificial robot-like living creatures that simulate human beings. By introducing the robotoids, the Russians were able to make a shambles of the Bolshevik plans then in progress. Preparations were moving fast for a new Bolshevik revolution here in the United States, but the Russian robotoids stopped it cold. Even more importantly, the joint Bolshevik and Zionist Middle East war plan was thwarted, at least for the time being. This prevented the Bolsheviks from going ahead with the rest of their plan for an American nuclear first strike against Russia. Since that time, the Russians have been pressing forward with their robotoid takeover of the United States. Within weeks, the year-and-a-half SALT II stalemate vanished, and the treaty was signed in Vienna. And for months now, major surprises have been peppering the news, which are the direct result of Russia's robotoid invasion. I alerted you to watch for these in AUDIO LETTER 46 and have commented on them as they have taken place. In Topic No. 2, I pointed out the continuation of the Senator Church robotoid strategy to undo the Cuba crisis and save SALT II. And this month there continue to be important new developments in Russia's robotoid takeover here. A very important case has to do with America's new relations with Red China. In 1978, the Carter administration was in a state of panic over Russia's newly deployed crushing military power in space. The so-called China card policy was the result. America suddenly dumped Taiwan and recognized Red China last December. But the Russians are working fast to unravel the ties between the United States and China. Russia is determined to reestablish her own working relationship with China. This month, talks are continuing between Russian and Chinese officials in Moscow with this goal in view. And suddenly, just this month, a federal district judge has ruled that it is illegal for President Carter to breach the treaty with Taiwan. Instead, he says, Congress must be consulted. Only last June, the same judge had refused to rule in the case. But since then, Russia's robotoid takeover here has changed things. And so, out of the blue, has come the surprise thunderbolt of this ruling. It could hardly be better calculated to shake Chinese confidence in the United States. And it comes at the very moment when Red Chinese negotiators are staring across the table at their Russian counterparts in Moscow. In every possible way, the Russians are trying to make use of their robotoid advantage while they can, because there is a lesson which runs throughout military history, and the Russians know it well. That lesson is that when one side in a conflict develops a new weapon, the other side will soon counter it with a similar weapon. So a new weapon can decide a conflict only if it is used quickly. In AUDIO LETTERS 46 and 47, I reported that robotoid technology in the United States is far behind that of Russia. But now the Bolshevik and Zionist enemies of Russia have achieved their own surprise. The Rothschild interests, which control both movements, have for many years been deeply involved in biological research of all kinds. They have not succeeded in learning the secrets of the Russian robotoids, but they have achieved success with something similar. They are called synthetic automatons, or simply synthetics. A Rothschild synthetic is similar to a Russian robotoid in certain ways. Each is an artificial life form designed to simulate a human being, but synthetics also differ from robotoids in important ways. For one thing, they are generated by radically different techniques. Both utilize genetic samples from actual humans as their starting point, but beyond that, everything is different. The Russian process is a close relative of recombinant DNA techniques involving bacteria. The details of the process are shrouded in great secrecy, but it enables robotoids to be generated from scratch very rapidly. The Rothschild process, by contrast, does not start from scratch. Instead, certain tissues extracted from cattle are the starting point. The synthetic is then generated in a process that changes the genetic makeup in order to simulate a person being copied. It is the outgrowth of a discovery made 20 years ago in France. The experiment involved two species of ducks called khaki Campbells and white Pekins. The landmark duck experiment of 1959 was reported in a book titled The Biological Time Bomb by Gordon Rattray Taylor. It was published in 1968 by the New American Library, New York, New York. Taylor described the experiment in the words, quote, "They had extracted DNA from the cells of the khaki Campbells and had injected it into the white Pekins, thinking that just possibly the offspring of the latter might show some character derived from khaki Campbells. To their astonishment, the actual ducks they injected began to change. Their white feathers darkened, and their necks began to take on the peculiar curve which is a mark of the khaki Campbell." Unquote. Beginning with that clue of 2 decades ago, the Rothschild synthetic process has been developed in secret, and now, my friends, synthetics are beginning to appear on the scene. Earlier this month, on October 9, Carter Robotoid No. 18 was scheduled to hold a news conference. 3 days earlier, Brezhnev No. 2 had made his proposals in East Berlin for military reductions in Europe. Robotoid 18 had been programmed to react positively to the proposals, but instead our alleged President said, quote, "I think it's an effort designed to disarm the willingness or eagerness of our allies adequately to defend themselves." Unquote. The Russians were dumbfounded. This was a fresh Robotoid. Surely the recurring instability problem could not be showing up this fast. After the news conference, he was bundled off for examination and testing, and that produced the second surprise. It was not Robotoid 18 at all, but a synthetic. The synthetic was then transported to Novosibirsk for further study. There, Robotoid scientists were able to establish an important and unpleasant fact. The source of the genetic material used in generating the synthetic had been Robotoid 18. And whereas the Russian Robotoids vary somewhat from one to another, the synthetic was virtually identical in appearance to the missing Robotoid 18. But an important favorable fact was also discovered. The synthetics are inferior mentally to the Robotoids. It is not yet clear how fast the Bolsheviks will be able to deploy their synthetics, but the guerrilla war between the Rothschild synthetics and the Russian Robotoids is already beginning. The Carter synthetic on October 9 was a shock to the Russians, and yet they have known for months that the synthetics would soon appear. For that reason, the Russians are beginning to re-emphasize their other weapons in their battle against the Bolsheviks here in America. As of now, they are beginning to use geophysical warfare again as part of their overall campaign to whittle away at the danger of nuclear war. On October 16, Chairman Hua of China was in France trying to buy Mirage fighters, among other things. But the Russians sent a clear message to both France and China that they should forget the whole idea. That day, a Russian geophysical warfare weapon was set off in an undersea trench in the Mediterranean off Nice, France. It produced a sudden ebb tide followed by a tidal wave that smashed 36 miles of the French Riviera. It was a new experience for the French, but not for Chairman Hua. The Russians used geophysical warfare to give him a message a year ago, as I reported in AUDIO LETTER 38. But for us Americans, it is now coming closer to home. In AUDIO LETTER 41, I reported the planting of 46 bombs underground for earthquake generation in California. During the past few months, the Russians have been setting off preliminary quakes with gradually rising strength. On August 6, the strongest quake in 68 years, 5.9 on the Richter scale, shook San Francisco. And this month, on October 15, a Richter 6.4 quake was set off in Southern California. The Russians are becoming convinced that their Robotoids will not be enough to stop the Bolsheviks. As I have reported in recent months, they have been slowed by troubles with the Robotoids, and now they are faced with the added problem of the Rothschild synthetics. And so, rather than let the Bolsheviks regroup and launch nuclear war, the Russians are turning once again to geophysical warfare, including weather warfare. The West Coast is a prime target because of the heavy concentrations of aerospace and military activity there. The Kremlin is debating whether the time has come after all to unleash the great man-made catastrophe on America's West Coast. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.